Mr. Raab has written an article in the Mail on Sunday saying he would prefer to leave the EU with a deal, but the UK must also calmly demonstrate unflinching resolve to leave in October at the latest. A rival candidate is accusing the favourite Boris Johnson of offering a damaging and dishonest Brexit plan. The International Development Secretary, Rory Stewart, said he couldn't serve under Mr. Johnson because he supported a no-deal Brexit. The Work and Pensions Secretary, Amber Rudd, is seen by some as a potential kingmaker in the Tory leadership contest. She was asked on the BBC's Today programme about backing Boris Johnson.
There are some very good candidates out there.
Do you believe he's an honest politician?
There are some very good candidates out there, Justin.
Do you believe he's an honest politician? It's a simple question.
And I'm going to give you my answer. I'm not going to start maligning any of my colleagues. We've got a leadership race on. This is a really serious moment for the country. I want to hear what their solution is.
People in Ireland appear to have voted overwhelmingly in favour of making it easier to obtain a divorce in a referendum. With 12 out of 31 constituencies counted so far, the yes vote is running at 81%. Here's our Ireland correspondent, Chris Page.
Since 2015, people in Ireland have voted to allow same-sex marriage and abortion. The latest referendum has been about taking divorce law out of the constitution to allow Parliament to change it. Currently, couples can apply for a divorce if they've been separated for 4 years. The government led by Leo Varadkar has indicated it'll shorten the time frame to 2 years. The church argued against the change, saying it would undermine marriage and push up Ireland's divorce rate, which is very low by European standards.
A British man has died minutes after reaching the top of Mount Everest. Robin Fisher, who was 44, is the 10th person to die on the world's highest peak this week. Sports. England's cricketers have lost by 12 runs to Australia in a one-day World Cup warm-up match in Southampton. Australia made 297 for 9. Their former captain Steve Smith made a century, his first since being temporarily banned for his part in the ball tampering scandal. He said he didn't let the boos from the crowd put him off.
It doesn't bother me, it's just doing my job, and I know that I've got the support of my teammates up on the balcony, and for me that's the most important thing, and if I can make them proud out in the middle and make Australians proud as much as I can, then that's my job.
Bong Joon-ho has become the first director from South Korea to win the coveted Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival. He took the award for the film Parasite, about a family of scammers, which critics say taps into the widening gap between rich and poor. And that's the BBC News at 3 minutes past nine. Our next at 10.
This Bank Holiday Monday on BBC Radio 2. From midday, electric boots and mohair suits, rock and roll at the movies. Join a cast of thousands, including Elton John, Brian May, Bradley Cooper and more.
To have your favourite rock star acting in a movie, really exciting.
And then at 2, Martin Kemp's New Romantics.
Come with me, Martin Kemp, and some very special guests on a 3-hour musical journey through the New Romantic era and beyond.
Bank Holiday Monday on BBC Radio 2.
Someone says Three Chords. Do you like the song?
Yeah.
But you didn't like it, if it was one more chord, if only it was one more chord, I'd have bought that record. Well, there's this thing I do in the chat show about the shuffles that we do. Mm. And the shuffle is also at the basis of a march. So when they used to recruit all the guys in World War One and World War Two to go to the war, send them in. So they wound them up. And then they send the Scottish with the bagpipes as well. They'd send them in first. Rouse the Scotsman, here's the pipes.
The devils in skirts.
That's what they were called, yeah. And that would frighten the life out of a lot of people. Yeah. Me too, I think.
You've met a few devils in skirts.
Yeah, one or two.
Hello, I'm Nicky Campbell, and welcome to part one of Here We Are and Here We Go.
a look back at one of rock music's greats. Just before his 70th birthday, and just after the release of his autobiography, I Talk Too Much, Francis Rossi joins me in a frank but friendly conversation to reminisce about his remarkable life and career and his obvious passion for music.
I just like music, so, and a lot of rock, country, pop and blues are so close together. And we get elitist about music and want to intellectualise about music. It hits the gut of the soul. Something happens inside. And that's why I love music. I love music. That's why I love music, because I don't know where it's coming from. Realised a guy in jam, he had an issue that for some years he couldn't mention that he was influenced by us, and it was Rick showed him his first chord and stuff like that, and it was when we did some movie or documentary about the movie that he kind of said yeah, and then I sort of thought yeah, that's, he's grown up and gone yeah, well, and I understand when people cannot mention they like us for their own image. It's what this business and this world is like. I talk too much, I know.
No, you don't. I want you to do more of it. One thing clear throughout the interview was his deep friendship with fellow guitarist and singer Rick Parfitt.
Nobody knew Ricky like I did. I knew him that long. I met him the day I went through the door at Butlins, and the day I was 16.
So let's go back to that fateful day. May 29th, 1965. It was Francis' 16th birthday, and the Spectres, the band he'd formed back at school with Alan Lancaster, had just got their first big breakthrough. A four-month summer season at Butlins, Minehead. It was on that day he met not only his first wife, but someone who was to be his friend for life, Rick Parfitt. Here are Rick and Francis reliving those early memories.
We were in Butlins, you know, we'd just got to Butlins and we passed this audition to get there, and we were in the Pig and Whistle, yeah. And we thought, well, we're not playing a bar, we want to be moved to the Rock and Roll Ballroom. So we got moved to the Rock and Roll Ballroom, which was a big mistake because the other place was packed. And every afternoon we used to have to play, and people would walk up one set of stairs and walk out the other side and just not stop. And one day this blonde bloke came in.
That'd be me then.
He'd be sort of staring and that, and then we got to know each other and blah, 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 blah.
Standing their hands on hips, just staring. Oh, they were great. But no, I was mesmerised by them. They were fantastic. I'm just playing all the old rock and roll hits, you know, particularly one track I remember called Bloodhound. It's fantastic. And I just stand there and thought, you know, because I was with a trio called The Highlights, and we used to do a little spot. And just sort of three or four songs, you know, and then I was finished and I'd go over to the Rock Ballroom and see this lot. And I thought, well, you know, that's really what I want to do. I was happy up till that point with my cabaret career because I just wanted to be in show business. I was happy being in show business, you know. Well, we all left Butlins and we left, you know, big friends, and we stayed in touch. And I was living in Plumstead at the time, and Francis was in Bromley and Alan was in Peckham. And we just used to get together quite a lot, and I used to go to a lot of their gigs. Then out of the blue, I had nothing to do. The Highlights had split up, and I'd become a Baker's Roundsman. And I was a bit browned off with it, although I did quite enjoy it. Use your loaf.
Yeah.
And then I got a call completely out of the blue. Do you want to join the band? I said, let me think. And that was that.
So in the early days, it wasn't like separate rooms and the same table when you had breakfast. It was like the same room, the same bed. Yeah. There's a line here, you know, you wrote in the book, there's a line that absolutely killed me, where you say that in some of the early tours, we would even share a bed. More like Morecambe and Wise.
We would share beds. It didn't seem weird.
Cheaper, yeah.
Yeah, so we would end up in twin beds, which would be fine. And I remember somewhere in some coastal town out of season, we were awake for hours just thinking of rhyming slang things and making each other laugh. And it was reminding me when I was with my brother when we were little that you'd be chatting away and then just realise you'd fell asleep and woke up in the morning. That was good, wasn't it? And then we got on and did whatever the gig was.
Mm. What did you love about him most?
He had a flash that I loved, and although it was flash, don't be flash, Ricky, you could say it to him, but he was taught that, and he grew in cabaret, and he was quite effeminate when we were younger, and I liked that. And later in life, he was trying to be... it was a caricature of himself, trying to be this rock, because he did look like the archetypal rock star. He really did look the part. And in the end, he was trying to do it. I loved a song of his, "When I Can't See All the Reasons."
When I find myself in trouble and I need someone to lean on, I only have to call and you're right there by my side. When I can't see all the reasons why you have to be so far away, I wonder if our love is really here to stay. Because I can't have my feelings and I can't hide my love for you. And I'll always believe in all the things that you want me to.
And he hated his voice like that, and I loved it. It's who he was and why we had him join the band. And so and when we were walking out to a thing, he'd make this dreadful screaming noise to get his voice to sound scratchy. Mm-hmm. So whoever got in between the relationship got to him to think he had to be this thing that he wasn't.
But at his best?
At his best, he was fabulous. Which is what we saw in the first play. When the first gig he did was meant to do with us, he did his thing of not learning the songs. It was Ready to Be All Right on the night. And he unplugged his amp and mind all night. But I still, and the band wanted to get rid of him at the time when he first joined, but I was not having that because I'd found someone that I could be with who was great to be with and fun to be with. And it was us two against everything else. And that was like that for many years, which is why I suppose it was successful early on.
But when you're looking at each other on the stage and it's all working, there must have been moments of, I love this guy.
You don't need that, do you? It's there. It's just there. And that's why we had that rapport, because it was just there. I don't think I ever said that to him. He ever said it to me. He'd have gone sod off. We were just that close.
When you guys came on the television, when I was growing up, whenever I'd look and I knew, because you had incredible chemistry, and I think, oh, this is going to be good. These guys are funny. These guys have a real connection and a real bond. But I guess sometimes it was just showbiz. Or you say, I know.
No,
he was Mr. Show and you were Mr. Business.
Shows with you before. I mean, we'd be walking in, might not be talking very much that day for whatever reason, and it would just go on, yeah. The worst thing was people would say, can you go in and do something funny? And then, nope. It just wouldn't work.
Spontaneity.
Yeah, it's no good telling us to be funny, but we could be funny. So I found that weird.
But you touched on it there. the best of times, mm-hmm. when the cogs were moving, you just felt the heat. When that band was working, something transcendent, something telepathic between you, that togetherness when that musicians often get, but you got that with each other on another level.
There's a clip we use in the talk show, and it's a clip of us playing Paper Plane at the Marquee. And even I've realised that I would play the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and he'd be going, so it's like the two guitars meld to one.
I love Paper Plane.
Yeah. Tell me what song it's an obvious nick from.
Da, da, da,
wrap
da,
your
da,
silver in my tambourine.
There's no originality in the world, is there?
No. It wasn't like I sat and copied it like that. It just... You don't sit there and think, oh, let's nick that line. Something happens and then later on I'll...
I'm going to forgive you. That's a great song.
To tour and buses, rock and roll buses, and we went to two buses at one period, and of course everybody was thinking, well, they're really not getting on now, it's bad, you know. And the truth was is that the rest of the band were on another bus and him and I were on the same bus together, so even when we weren't getting along, we would still be we'd be on the same bus together. We were so used to being together. We would eat at the same time of day together, And obviously...
It was quite a marriage, wasn't it?
Yeah, if things were fractious, then even sitting at the table, you wouldn't be sat at lunchtime where we eat our evening meal at 2 o'clock. You wouldn't want to be sat at that table if him and I weren't sort of... Because you could feel it, obviously. But when we were all right...
There's a line in a McCartney song about Lennon, Here Today, and he talks about... He kind of hints at all the difficulties between them. But then there's a line, but we could always play...
Something happens, whether it's the egos, and I have this thing that we are, all of us, including people like yourself, there's an insecure little show-off in us. We wouldn't be able to do this.
No.
unless we could get on and do this and show off. Because obviously I'm enjoying now talking about myself, but the other side of me gets, if I hear this, I'll die of embarrassment. So I never listen to
so
it.
So you should.
It kills me. It really kills me, so I don't listen. I think, listen to that voice, that big head.
I could listen to you all day. I could just sit here and listen to you all day.
We pay that man for that comedy?
Every day. Yeah,
that's
going to be...
Cheese.
That's going to be cut out. Talk about the dream. Yeah, so, because we may not be the young ones very long. I know you loved that line when you were growing up in the young ones. Everly Brothers, same kind of changing chords.
Yeah, just the strum. That's all I wanted to do.
Wake Up Little Susie.
Kathy's Clown, so sad, all that stuff. I remember hearing Kathy's Clown, thinking I'd be the perfect one for that, but I'm not sure if it's because I kind of enjoy the hurt angle, if you like. I don't know. When Ricky died, people said that I didn't cry. And somebody asked me recently, what makes me cry? It's probably rubbish on the TV that's designed to do that. It wouldn't happen to me in life. I mean, he was dying in front of us. Shocking, but it didn't make me cry.
You say something in the book which I find incredibly moving about that. And it totally chimed with me. Can I just read it just a little bit just to remind you?
I've got to say no, haven't I?
Yeah.
Can we read something from your book? No, I'd rather you didn't.
You probably read it better than me, but...
I'm not good.
I don't want to dwell on some of the negative things Rick's family had to say about me after his death. They were grieving for their father or husband or ex-husband. Mm. They didn't know him like I did. Mm-hmm. They weren't there whenever I would cover for him in the studio or there on the bus at night on the road while he moaned at me or got angry or started crying. They weren't there when the two of us were experiencing the best times of our lives together. From the perils of sharing a musty bed at Butlin's to the impossible highs of playing to millions of people for so many years, selling millions of records, writing songs that are now beloved as some of the finest rock anthems ever.
Did I write that? It's pretty good, isn't it, really? I've got to go, this is wonderful! That's rather good, isn't it? That's the truth, though. And I do understand their kids feeling that way. Well, I didn't at the time. Nobody knew Ricky like I did. I knew him that long. I met him the day I went through the door at Butlin's and the day I was 16. And there were times I covered for him, there were times when we had fabulous times together. But I've said it a lot recently, is that because we were that close, management, perhaps wives, girlfriends, found that an affront in some way, that they wanted to ruin it. And I think to manipulate either one of us, whenever each one need to be manipulated for whatever reason, the idea was to make sure that there was some separation between us two. Well, all the time that we were close, it just wasn't going to happen. And I'm sure that probably wasn't fair to the other guys in the band, because as soon as he joined, it was him and I against the world. And most bands are us against the world. But then it was me and Rick, the band, and the rest of the world. And I'm sure some people were upset by that. I can't help that. It's just how close Ricky and I were when we were younger.
You're listening to Here We Are and Here We Go, Francis Rossi with me, Nicky Campbell. As the Spectres, they tried out many cover versions, including Shirley Bassey's hit I Who Have Nothing and the Bee Gees' Spicks and Specks.
Where is the sun that shone on my head? The sun in my life, it is dead, it is dead. Where is the light that will stay in my street? And where are the friends I could meet, I could meet? Where are the girls I left far behind? The sticks and the specks of the girls on my mind. Where is the song that shone on my head? The sun in my life, it is dead, it is dead. Where are the girls I left far behind? The sticks and the specks of the girls.
Go back to the early music, Papa Piccolino.
It's the first thing I remember when I was a kid, Papa Piccolino. And they were trying to play me a little, I keep calling it a filet mignon, it was a horn mignon, a tiny concertina, like the accordion, was going to play the accordion. And they would play that song to me to stop me from crying when I fell down the stairs, which apparently I did quite a lot because my head was too big. Not a word from
was
you.
Was it a musical influence in the rhythm or anything like that?
Yeah, it was. There was, I think, there's a mafia movie. What are those famous mafia movies? One, two, three. Godfather. Mm. And there's this little Italian guy in the wedding one day and he goes to this band playing. He said, hey, what's this American? Give me some Italian.
All over Italy, they know his concertina. Papa Piccolino, he plays so prettily to every signorina. Papa Piccolino from sunny Italy. Oh, listen to the music I hear. Oh, Papa Piccolino is near to win a smile or maybe a tear before traveling on. A vagabond who wanders along, a millionaire, but only in song, as though the world might really belong to him. This fellow plays a melody so mellow that everyone keeps shouting, bello, bello. All over Italy they know he's...
This is a shuffle, isn't it? And the same with the feet are going, and the same with the march. But it's also, they're coming to take me away, ha ha, he he ho, to the funny farm. The shuffle is at the basis.
A dog and a cat.
It's the basis of so much music that, I swear again, why one can become elitist about it when you can find it.
And they sang Shang a Lang and we ran.
He's away, look, don't you dare.
Ooh, up, doobie doo. Pictures of matchstick men. Now, this is really interesting. So you're sitting on the bog and you're working it out, and a little bit of it is
Papa Piccolino, and a little bit of it is Hey Joe Hendrix.
Right? Yeah, based on this, I started trying to do Hey Joe. Yeah.
So that's how it came, your first big hit.
Then. Yeah, but also there was a lot of it was all chink 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 chink. That was the end of the decade. To be honest, that was dying out, and I tried. There was a whole period of everything being four on the bar, four on the bass drum, four on a snare, and four on the hi hat, like this. Sorry, Mush. The Stones, Davey, Deezy, Beaky, Mick and Titch. Sorry, guys. And so everything was for them. And I'd had this, I want to have you here, trying to write that thing. That was nearly a hit. I think the BBC banned it. Thank you.
I want to have you here with me, to cuddle up so near to me, and do the things you like me to do to you. Like it when I tickle you, we start to kiss, it pleases you. It gets so hot, I just don't know what to do. To take you when you're feeling good, to love you like I know I should. It makes me feel all of 10 feet tall.
BBC banned Almost But Not Quite There.
Yeah, well, think about it. At the time, that you know what he's referring to, don't we?
A journey.
And so that was good. And so I thought, and everything had become chin, chicka chin, chicka chin, chicka chin. And so I tried doing Hey Joe, and I came out with Matchstick Men. And really, we're so close to the end of the decade. It seems that every decade something does happen, something does change. We were getting to the end of the decade. I've seen the Stones do that occasionally over the years. They were particularly some years back, which we could talk about as where they sold. He said, you can see we're at the end of the decade. And many acts was tried to sound like the new ones coming along all the time. I remember the Stones trying to do something where Mick sang in falsetto. Well, it's something weird. Right. And there was also... there were all those 60s bands that were coming out of America. So to really think of...
Zeitgeist. Getting the zeitgeist, that's what it is. Get on the wave of what's happening.
And to think of Uncle Mick and Uncle Keith standing there going... It's completely weird to the image of whom they are. And that's what happened with Matchstick Men. We suddenly had a hit at the end of the thing and the decade was changing and it became really passé very, very quickly.
you imagined what it was like to take LSD, which is really funny because it's got the acidy kind of the beginning bit. It's got the acidy Piper at the Gates of Dawny, Pink Floydy kind of. You know what I mean?
You know what he does in his spare time. We know where he was, don't we?
It's been a long time. and then you go into that kind of Beatles, Kinks, psychedelic whimsy. Bit, you know, that,
well,
that
again, it was all imaginings. Yeah. Even Bob Young and I, some years later, when we were writing In My Chair and things, we ran along walking across the rooftops in my chair, you know, when we thought that was really wild. Mm-hmm. And the, I think in Matchstick Men, I was copying, you're right, John Lennon, with that yellow matter from a dead dog's eye, and all that's wow, man, and colours.
But then it goes into the nice, sort of whimsical, melodic bit, which.
You know, that's phasing. The phasing stuff that goes on, which DJs at the time called skying, which was you recorded on the quarter-inch, two quarter-inch masters.
Small stereo. Faces, did they teach you that?
Yeah, no, before them. They're stereo. They came and bought ice cream off my dad. That's how I met them. But you have two machines running at once and a third one recording. You run these two together, and as you move the voltage, so they slow, speed and slow down, and as they hit together, you get phase cancellation, which makes that noise.
That hit record, Pictures of Matchstick Men, that saw the band make their first Top of the Pops appearance. Hardly recognisable, dressed in frilly shirts, but what is obvious is the fun they had and the bond between Francis and Ricky. Might have been the first appearance on Top of the Pops, but they went on to play another 105 times, more than any other group. But the follow-up, The Black Veils of Melancholy, copy and paste. Identical. I love that. You must have just thought we got the formula here.
But we rehearsed that in Brixton. It was derelict at the time. All you could do was rent the stage, and the producer and engineer were there and rehearsed it. We were all convinced it was really down to had it, you know, until the end of the recording. I think first time I heard it on the radio, I went, no, that's a mistake.
The pictures that I see, I've seen, but all I
It's the first time you hear him on the radio, you go, mistake, or, yep, yeah, we're all right there.
Mm.
Which you can't do anymore, because I hear on the radio, yep, I'm all right there. No, I'm not. It's not worked. We're in a different... Because, you know, us in the 70s wanted the future, and it was going to be so fabulous. We're going to have everything. We now have everything, and we're all going,
So which was the first song that you wrote, or the record that you made, that was the template for your later success musically, that set your musical direction?
No,
down the dustpipe?
It may have seemed that way, or in my chair, it may have seemed that way, but we never sat there and thought, this is what you do, other than it was the basis of the thing, it was the two guitars.
What you feel comfortable with.
The interplay between the two guitars. Mm. It wasn't like we sat there, although, I suppose to contradict that, Alan would say it quite often. He was very, very worried about image. When we did Margarita, it was just... He couldn't deal with the idea of the root and fifth bass. I did a song once called... with Bernard Frost, called Eyes Are Crying. And he sat in my car. We sent the staff a listen. He had a listen. He said, do you know what that needs?
Mm-hmm.
He needs a bit of man's bass. And I... Beg your pardon? I used to feel for him some... You couldn't broach the subject... But I used to feel for him somewhat, in as much as it has to have man's bass, otherwise it doesn't figure. And a lot of rock musicians cannot deal with a dung, dung, which is a root and fifth bass. No, you couldn't do that. You've got to do something else other than root and fifth, otherwise it's not credible, it's not manly. It suits.
When I get older.
It's the root and fifth, yeah.
Yeah. Francis and the Quo have had a mixed relationship with the BBC and Radio 1 throughout their career. And in his book, Francis says, on the release of Dan the Dustpipe, Radio 1 breakfast show host Tony Blackburn said, I don't know about Dan the Dustpipe. I think that one should go down the dustbin. Heading down upon a town pike. Wasn't the only Radio 1 DJ to love the Quo. John Peel was a big fan and wrote in the sleeve notes of the Rollover Lay Down EP, many a disastrous gig was saved by a Quo record. And at Reading Festival, John introduced them as one of the finest rock and roll bands in the world.
Taking a drink on the bridge from the table. I drank a toast, you were the most.
When Status Quo joined forces with the Beach Boys, bizarrely, they released Fun, Fun, Fun. They appeared on everything from GMTV, The Des O'Connor Show, and Cilla Black's Surprise, Surprise. At the time, Radio 1 were changing their music policy, and controller Matthew Bannister refused to play the record. And they found themselves in a legal tussle with the BBC. And the story even made the 6 o'clock news.
The rock group Status Quo say they're planning to sue BBC Radio 1 because the station doesn't play their records anymore. The group, which was set up in the 60s, say they've been banned from the airwaves because they're too old. Radio 1 says its main aim is to play the best new music.
Banning the band. Status Quo outside the enemy camp this morning, the BBC's broadcasting house. In an unprecedented move in the pop world, they've put down their guitars to take up a legal battle to get their records played on the nation's best-known radio station.
Music is for everybody, and there's room for everybody. Sure there is. I mean, you know, it's not from our standpoint. You think of the fans. You know, they'd like to hear their favourite artists. Get down, get down,
Down, Down, Deeper and Down, a song that could describe the direction of recent relations between Status Quo and Radio 1. With 50 hits under the belts of their expanding waistlines, the veteran rockers claim the BBC is keeping them off its playlist. Radio 1 says Status Quo no longer fits the station's new music style.
Radio 1 is going for the young, contemporary sound of the UK. We are developing new artists and new talent. That's our role. Radio 2 is reflecting the more mature artists, and I think that's just the right place for Status Quo to be heard at the moment.
Well, she got her daddy's car and she cruised to the hamburger stand now. Seems she forgot all about the library like she told her old man now. And with her radio blasting, goes cruising just as fast as she can now. And she'll have fun, fun, fun till her daddy takes the T-bird away. Well, the girls can't stand her cause she walks, looks and drives like an ace now. She makes the Indy 500 look like a Roman chariot race now. A lot of guys try to catch her but she leads them on a wild goose chase now. And she'll have fun, fun, fun till her daddy takes the T-bird away. Well, she's making a turn and it looks like she's coming around.
I think you mentioned playing Nebworth in the book,
yeah.
Which is extremely engaging. What a romp, what a tale. And you make a really good point, because maybe you were suspicious of a lot of people who were playing music on the radio back then, that you thought I might have been sniffy or I might have been snobbish, but I was never sniffy or snobbish about Status Quo. And one of the things that really annoyed me over the years
was when people used to joke about, three chords, you know, Howlin' Wolf.
Yeah, really.
Uses
or
three
chords. Whomever, yeah.
Exactly.
Or the greatest arias, lots of the arias and lots of the greatest classical sections that we all know are three chords. But I would always find that if someone says three chords, do you like the song?
Yeah.
But you didn't like it, or you, if it was one more chord, if only it was one more chord, I'd have bought that record.
What?
Which just, it just becomes ridiculous, and we get elitist about music and want to intellectualise about music. It hits the gut of the soul. Something happens inside, and that's why I love music, that it... I love music. That's why I love music, because I don't know where it's coming from. I like to think, like some people, everybody, I suppose, there's a certain... image about oneself. I.e. the Pet Shop Boys, for years there was a friction between us because of some incident. But one of the, my favourite records is It's a Sin, and there was a thing a few years ago. I'm in the bathroom in the morning, radio. God, to hear that again. And I asked my PA to find out where they are and send them a message and tell them, look, I really hate to admit this, but I love your new single. And they came back very polite, and obviously time had gone by and they'd gotten older and said, any possibility of a choir cover on that one? So the realities came. So when people get that intellectualised or become elitist about music, they disappear at their own doorway there. It's ridiculous.
And It's a Sin, it's very operatic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's got that descending.
Yeah, yeah. I do like Italian opera, and that's another one that people get. I know people who like opera, but not Italian opera, my darling. You couldn't. Well, I do.
The greatest tunes ever written, Verdi.
Yeah, me too. I love all that.
Puccini.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bella Figlia dell'Amore.
Yeah, Rossi. Ice Cream. Sorry, I had to do that.
What's your favourite aria from the Italian opera?
Oh,
oeuvre?
I think my favourite is basically the top 10 or the top 20. I love Che Gelida Manina or...
That's a good one. Yeah, your tiny hand is frozen.
Yeah, my dad used to go around singing that, and he wasn't the most educated.
Dominic, yeah?
I know, Dominic.
Yeah.
And I wonder how he knew the translation. It was the correct translation. Your tiny hand is frozen, get you there. And Una Furtiva Lagrima, I love. So they're gone. I think it's the emotion. I suppose it takes me to a child. My dad would be going around, and he couldn't really sing it, but... it took me there, and I don't know. I've always found the emotion in opera. He was interested, my dad, because when we were younger, he was going around, Oi, Milby boy, boy, dad, Oi, Milby boy, what? And that was on the Ilkley Moor Bar Tat. But he heard, Oi, Milby boy, boy, dad. He'd go, Dad, and he'd say, that was you. Ice cream person.
But the highs in Che Gelida Manina. You can do the accent. But, you know, the musical highs in that, hitting those high notes, it is like a searing, soaring guitar solo.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. You feel it inside. You just feel it inside. That's why. And again, I know people that go, oh, no, not Italian opera. Please yourself.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Do you know what? In this programme, I can feel a little bit of Puccini coming on. I'll tell you, the record I used to like starting a show with was... Whatever You Want, because it's just a great show starter. You know, one of those things they call a radio record.
Yeah, but what's interesting about that, there was a, I think it was Hale & Pace did an operatic Mickey take, which was very good. thing with whatever you want. It's almost operatic. It's got an operatic feel about it. And it's unique in as much as the verse, the chorus, the riff, and everything are basically the same. The only slight relief is the bridge, which is, again, very similar to an aria in opera. So, and I find that always works when, I think Andrew had the idea when he went to Rick with it. And the whole idea of what, and then it's the phrase, whatever you want, whatever you like, whatever you need, whatever you, everybody thinks, yeah. So that's as simple as you could get it. But you'd never get away with that kind of intro these days. They're just too long.
It's a fantastic intro.
Yeah, excellent intro.
Yeah.
Atmosphere.
Should we do it? So welcome to the world of opera. With Francis Rossi. And here's that great aria. A 1, 2, 3.
Bad, let it.
Join me, Nicky Campbell, tomorrow evening at 9 o'clock, where we'll learn about his deep love of country music and, of course, the career-changing appearance when Status Quo opened Live Aid back in July 1985. And if you'd like to hear more Status Quo, you can via the BBC Sounds app, where you can hear the band perform a special in concert recorded for Radio 2 at the Roundhouse in London in 2014, where, for the first time ever, the band put down their famous electric guitars to perform an acoustic set. Thank you for listening, and thanks to my producer, Julie Newman. This is Radio 2 on the BBC Sounds app, on digital radio and on 88 to 91 FM.
BBC News at 10 o'clock. This is Tom Harrigan. The former Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab has entered the race for the Conservative Party leadership. He's the sixth candidate to put his name forward after Theresa May said she would resign as